This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. On the programme this week, we have an update on the Eternal Wall of Answered Prayer, and we go to King William's College, past and present. But first, some music. Last Friday, the International World Day of Prayer was marked here by services at different times of the day all around the island. This year's service was prepared by the women of Nigeria and included this popular hymn. What a Friend We Have in Jesus, one of the hymns used in last Friday's International World Day of Prayer. And now we're going to King William's College for news, nostalgia and music. Let's start by congratulating three students from the college who got to the finals of the Thomas Cranmer Awards, a national competition organised by the Prayer Book Society. The qualifying heats for the Cranmer Awards are now part of the Manx Music Festival, and this year it was Zoe Vogel, Charles Carouche and Sean Cannon, all students at King William's College, who represented the Diocese of Soda and Man in the finals of this prestigious competition held at the end of February in the Chapel Royal at Hampton Court Palace in London. Rosa Smith from the Diocese of Southwark won the junior section of the competition, with our own Charles Carouche taking second place. The senior competition was won by King William's student Zoe Vogel. There were some 24 finalists from dioceses all around the UK, and I'm told that all the entries were of an exceptionally high standard, so this is a great achievement. Congratulations to you, Sean, Charles and Zoe, and to all who helped to prepare them for the competition. Candidates have to recite from memory passages chosen from the Book of Common Prayer. Senior competition winner Zoe Vogel chose the Collect, Epistle and Gospel for the 18th Sunday after Trinity. Here is Zoe reciting part of the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 22, beginning at verse 34.
When the Pharisees had heard that Jesus had put the Sadducees to silence, They were gathered together. Then one of them, who was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him, saying, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets."
Senior class winner of this year's National Cranmer Award, Zoe Vogel. And as all three finalists are students at King William's College, it seems fitting that we should follow Zoe's words with some music from the college choir. Recorded in June 2023, this is "The Mountains Shall Bring Peace," the new coronation anthem composed by Joanna Forbes Lestrange and sung here by King William's College Choir, joined by friends from the local community. They're conducted by Steve Dakin, who's head of music at the college, with organist Stuart Corry.
Give the King praise, just thanks, O God.
King William's College Choir, joined by friends from the local community, conducted by Steve Dakin and accompanied by organist Stuart Corry, and The Mountains Shall Bring Peace, the anthem commissioned by the Royal College of Church Music for the coronation of King Charles. And now for a bit of college nostalgia. Keystones was a series first broadcast here on Manx Radio in the early 1980s as part of our regular Sunday morning religious programming. The presenter was Reverend David Bush, a former vicar of Moraun, who travelled round the island's churches, discovering all he could about their history and their place in the community, usually in conversation with the vicar or minister. But in this programme, David is in the chapel in King William's College, talking with Dr. Paul Brigazzi, who was principal of the college from 1979 to 1989.
Hello and welcome once again to Keystones. The name King William's College summons up many thoughts. It's a seat of learning. It's the first important building which you see when you land at Ronaldsway Airport. Even the tantalising questionnaire in our Guardian newspaper at Christmas time. So today we've come down to visit the college during this year of 1983, which is a very important year for the college. I have with me here the principal, Dr. Paul Brigazzi. Now, Paul, why is 1983 very important in your history?
It's simply the 150th anniversary of the date when college was opened to pupils.
And it's always been on this spot?
Yes.
And in the buildings that surround us here?
That's right. The buildings were purpose-built, designed by Handsome and Welsh. Foundation stone laid in 1830, with much celebration. And in contrast, the actual opening of the school 3 years later was quite a small affair. They just opened the door and in walked 46 pupils, three of them from England, the rest were local boys. The youngest was 7 and the oldest 21.
And obviously in the intervening 150 years, your numbers have built up to what are we now?
We're about 360 now.
And that includes a sprinkling of girls, I gather.
Yes, an elegant but small sprinkling, yes.
Now, who started the college and why was it founded here?
It's a very interesting question that the trust which gave rise to the college was established by Bishop Barrow in 1668, who annexed a couple of farms, one of which was occupied, the other which had a tenant in, and that poor unfortunate tenant was evicted. And the bishop, who was also governor at the time, took over. The rents from the farm were accumulated and put into a fund, the purpose of which was to send a couple of scholars to Trinity College, Dublin, in order that they may be trained for holy orders and return to serve in the Manx Church. And this is what happened for many years. But that, I think, that practice fizzled out after a while, and the money in the trust was spent in various ways and educational purposes on the island, but eventually in the 1820s the fund had grown to such an extent that the then bishop, Bishop Ward, said, well, we've got enough here to do something really substantial. Let's start a school for the education of local boys. And King William's was established.
Of course, today, coming here, we're particularly concerned with the chapel. This was built later than the original school was built, some 50 years or so, was it?
Yes, it was 1879 that the chapel was consecrated.
The rather delicate Gothic canopies over certain of the stalls, the sort of things that Pugin would have delighted in, and John Betjeman, too, for that matter. Now,
Indeed, who occupies these
places?
Well, during the normal weekday services and on Sundays, there are various members of the common room who inhabit those. There used to be more of them down at the west end, which in actual fact faces north, but that's beside the point. There used to be a great row of these canopies, but they were removed in order to make room for the organ loft, which is only about 20 years old. On state occasions, when we have the trustees visiting us and His Excellency, they inhabit these canopied stalls. You see here on the south side, which in fact faces west, a large double stall, which is for His Excellency, and Lady Cecil, and opposite them there's another large one, which would be for the Lord Bishop and his wife, unless the bishop was actually officiating in the sanctuary, and the trustees inhabit the other ones. And on those occasions, the common room have to make room for them and sit in the backs of the main block.
And the boys themselves sit very much college fashion, facing inwards.
Facing each other, yes, with the smallest in the front.
Today it's very peaceful, it's very quiet, and I imagine it's often like that, except perhaps when the airport is active or Langness foghorn is booming.
That's right. The Langness foghorn is well known to us during services. It's just slightly off the note which is given to the chaplain when he begins the versicles, you know. And so we always hope that when the organ gives him his note, that the foghorn will come in immediately afterwards and put him off key.
Talking about being off key, Charles Gard is here helping us with the programme. And as an old King William College boy, he's obviously got a great deal of experience about the music in the chapel. And of course, the organ isn't unknown to you here. Is this the organ that was in use when you were at the college?
No, when I was here, there was a very old wheezy pipe organ in the transept here. And I remember a friend and myself one day adjusted all the action to try and make it more efficient during the morning of a Sunday, and when it came to the evening service, the action had settled and the organ was completely unusable, and the music master switched it off with a great flourish and came down to the choir, and we had to sing the hymns unaccompanied, and we thought we were really going to be in serious trouble afterwards, but of course he was delighted because this was a great point in his favour, and he was able to agitate for a new organ, which he eventually got.
I think all the murals around the chancel where we are are very very interesting. They're all on metal sheeting. I imagine
yes.
This was done to protect the actual murals from the elements and the water that penetrates through the walls.
That's
here like they do
right.
Any other Manx building.
Yes, yes. And they're in very good condition. Here on the north side, they are scenes from the Gospels which involve the life of Thomas, to whom the chapel is dedicated.
Between some of the murals on the liturgical north side of the chancel, shall we say, there's an interesting pair of windows here which appears to say that St. James was one of the boys.
No, it's there are a small pair of windows which were given by the Reverend Walker. It's a practice he had in all the churches with which he was associated. He gave one window to commemorate the saint to whom the church or chapel was dedicated, another one to St. James, being his namesake. And the pair of windows, the left one is James, a servant of God, the right one is Thomas, one of the 12. And along the bottom, we have, reading left to right, James Walker, formerly a pupil. Unfortunately, the formerly a pupil is on the right-hand window and James Walker on the left. Consequently, the right window says, if taken by itself, Thomas, one of the 12, formerly a pupil, which I'm rather pleased to regard St. Thomas as an OKW.
But the secret then is to read horizontally and not vertically.
Yes, but the windows are so far apart that the innocent intruder might not realise that.
The windows, Paul, are very interesting. They appear to commemorate the saints, and also in some of the smaller vignettes near the bottom of them, they've got history of the Isle of Man, history of the college, haven't they, illustrated?
Yes, there is some link, however tenuous, between the saint or famous figure who's commemorated in the window and the little scene down below. I think of their kind, mid-Victorian, they are really rather super and form a lovely collection. There are 5 double windows down each wall, that's 20 pictures altogether.
On the other side of the sanctuary, there's a little font. This is an unusual piece of stonework, which doesn't obviously date from the chapel itself. What is that?
It dates from the 15th century, although it's only been in the chapel of St. Thomas here for about a year. It was given to college by a friend of the chaplain who found it while diving off Langness, and it is a stone crucible, 15th century, which was used in the smelting process associated with a mint. Presumably it was bronze that it was used for, and it sits there, a rather fine lump of stone, encrusted with marine worm remains and the odd bit of barnacle, and it's used for christening.
A nice relic from the past. And I think as we're recording this, there's a baptism about to take place in the chapel, so it's still used for baptisms.
Yes, yes. It's the infant son of Claire and Robin Humphreys-Jones, one of my colleagues here. He's about to be baptised.
Are there any great plans you've got for the future, Paul?
Well, I wish headmaster would not have great plans buzzing around in his head, but, you know, what can be realised remains to be seen.
So, although you're full of tradition here, you're not living in the past.
I like to think we combine the best of the past with a forward-looking approach, yes.
From the Manx Radio archive room in the early 1980s, Reverend David Bush talking with the then principal of King William's College, Dr. Paul Bragazzi, about the history of the college chapel. And we'll have more keystones in future programmes. And now for something quite different. The opportunity to chat with Richard Gamble and Ian Bullock gave me the chance to catch up on a project that we've talked about a few times on this programme since first it started. It's the Eternal Wall of Answered Prayer, and here's its founder, Richard Gamble, to remind us just exactly what this is.
We are building a national monument in the centre of the United Kingdom, which is made of 1 million bricks. It's a giant white infinity loop, and every brick represents a story of answered prayer. It's our way to make hope visible.
These are answered prayers, and you've been asking people to send in their prayers, and have they?
Yeah, and we've started to get some from the Isle of Man, which is really exciting. I think we're at about 125,000 answered prayers so far, which is great. We want to get to about 250,000, 300,000 by the time we open. We are collecting stories from all over the world right now. I think that's been one of the interesting parts of the journey, is to see people who go, well, I don't really know if I've got any answered prayers. And then they take some time to think, and it really blesses them because they remember the things that they prayed for, and they're able to look back and go, oh, yes, God did answer that. So I think that's an encouragement. And then obviously that encourages them to pray more, which is one of the things that we want to try and do, encourage people to call on the Jesus who still answers.
Now, you're putting this monument right in the centre of a huge area of visibility. It's going to be twice the size of the Angel of the North. What's the latest news, Richard?
The latest news is really exciting. We've raised enough money to build the monument, and we've started building. So we broke ground just a few days ago. So we've now moved from this idea of this being a dream or a hope. It's a reality. We're going to open in 2028, and the nation is going to be able to physically see, and then people all around the world are going to be able to digitally see a national landmark filled with 1 million prayers of when people have prayed to Jesus and he's answered.
We've got somebody else who's joined you in making this vision a reality, and Ian Bullock, lovely to meet you. Tell me where you stand in amongst all this, please.
Yeah, so I've spent 42 years in working in the NHS, and thought that I was moving towards a quiet retirement until the vision was shared with me. I've been a Christian for many, many years, and it's my privilege to come in as the chief executive and to deliver the project, really, to oversee the build, to manage that, but also to make sure that we've got enough funds ready for site opening at the end of 28.
And so you've got a big job. Have you got a good team alongside you?
Yeah, we've got an excellent team. We're partnering with the only company in the world probably that could have built this, VSL UK, and we've got an excellent project management team as well as our own operational team that have got different responsibilities. My job is really to make sure we build it to time and to money, which I've got some experience of with another big building in my previous role. So I bring a little bit of experience on that with me.
Do you feel God's hand is on this for you?
Yeah. I mean, everyone that's come into the Eternal Wall of Answered Prayer team has a personal story of how God has led them into that role. I'm no different. I met a guy in Portugal 18 months apart on a golf course, talking to that individual the second time, saying that I felt God was moving my wife and I into a different season. And he just stopped in his tracks and said, we've been praying for somebody with your leadership, your experience. I believe that God's calling you into this. Julie and I started looking at it. We captured the heart and the mind of the vision, and the rest is history. I started on April 1st.
Yeah.
And when you share it with other people, do you feel them catch the vision, Ian?
Well, I managed a large team in my previous role, 400 staff. I worked for a professional membership organisation with 44,500 members of the medical profession. When I was sharing the story of where I was going to, I was surprised at how positive people were. They knew of my Christian faith and they said, Ian, this is just a perfect fit for you and we're excited for you. And it's led to further conversations about my own faith and their curiosity.
Got to finish with a word from you, Richard.
I think all along the journey has brought the right people at the right time. I've seen in other charities where a founder has struggled with that relationship. But for Ian and I, it's just been perfect from the off. And we're working together as a team and just really excited to be released to carry on sharing the vision while Ian can get some of the nitty details that I don't like doing.
And if people are listening to this and would like to see where you're up to, follow you, is the website the best way of doing it?
Yes. Please go to eternalwall.org.uk. And listen, we still need more stories from the Isle of Man, please. So if Jesus has answered a prayer, we would love to hear it. Because there will be people in the Isle of Man in 100 years' time who'll find Eternal Wall and they'll go, I wonder if anything's happened on this island. And they'll read your story. And your story is going to lead them to Christ long after we've all left the planet.
Thank you, Richard Gamble and Ian Bullock, talking there about the Eternal Wall of Answered Prayer. And the website, with lots of images and much more information, is eternalwall.org.uk. And we'll finish off now with a look at our notice board. And there are two services this evening with a warm welcome for all. The Mariners Choir are in Peel Methodist Church for a service starting at 6:30, at which Gareth Moore will preach, and Matthew Quinn is the soloist. As usual, this will be followed by supper and community hymn singing. There's a fountain flowing deep and wide. That's the theme of tonight's Cafe Church in Ballabeg Chapel. It starts at 6:30 and will be led by Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett. A quick reminder now of those Lent lunches. Simple lunches raising money for local and global charities. And thank you to everyone who's providing the food and going along to eat it. St George's Lent lunches are each Monday in the parish hall on Alexander Drive here in Douglas between noon and 1:30. On Tuesday, you'll find lunch in the Abbey Church Hall in Ballasalla, served from noon until 2 p.m. And also this Tuesday, it is the final Lent lunch for this year in Ramsey in St Paul's Hall, open from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Tuesday. On Wednesday, Lent lunches are served in St Anthony's Pastoral Centre next door to the Catholic Church in Onchan between noon and 2 p.m. And on Fridays, head to St Thomas's Church, just off the promenade by the Gaiety Theatre here in Douglas, where Lent lunches will be served between noon and 1:30. On to concert news now, and Begarro Chapel on the main road, just outside Kirkmichael, invite you to an evening with Musicale. It's this Wednesday the 11th, starting at 8 o'clock. There'll be refreshments and a raffle, and admission is free. The Parish of Rushen start their programme of spring concerts this week in St Catherine's Church in Port Erin. The first one is this Thursday, March the 12th, and the guest artists are Rushen Silver Band. It starts at 7:30 with free admission, a retiring collection, and I'm quite sure there'll be refreshments after the concert too. On Friday the 13th, there'll be a special service in St Paul's Church in Ramsey. It's the induction of Reverend Daniel Norris, the new vicar in the parish of Ramsey and the North East. It's in St Paul's Church in Ramsey on Friday evening at 7 p.m. and the service is open to all as we give Reverend Daniel a warm and enthusiastic welcome to his new ministry on the island. And as you might imagine, I'll be inviting him to join me on this programme in a few weeks' time so we can get to know him a little better. And finally, Bride Methodist Chapel have a special service for Mothering Sunday. It's next Sunday, March the 15th, at 10:30, with a warm welcome for all. And that's all that we have time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock with Sundown, and I'd love you to come and join me in our virtual lounge for a great selection of easy listening music, plus your requests and dedications. And so, till whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening and wishing you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning.